Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Dana Buckler Show. My name is Dana, and I am pleased to welcome back after a sabbatical, if you will.
My, one way of putting it.
My co-host, a one Mr. Jason Waters. Jason, welcome back, buddy. How you doing?
Hey, it's good to be back on this side of the world.
Yeah, nice. No, it's been, what, about 4 months almost, or?
It definitely feels like it.
Yeah.
No, I think it's been, gosh, it's been at least 3 months.
Yeah.
3.5. Yeah. 4 months.
So about 4 months. So I've been just, you know, aimlessly trying to right the ship, you know, in one direction. But it's interesting. It's, you know, it's after you've been on the show for almost 2 years, and there was a lot of stuff that we were going to do in December that we never got around to doing. And I was just like, oh man, I need Jason back on the show. And we got to kickstart the 101 movies from the 2000s. There's a lot of stuff that we got to get going again. But first and foremost, let me just say, I'm super happy to have you back on the show.
Yes. Yeah, so, for those who have missed me, I, decided to get into a little bit of trouble with Johnny Law. I would definitely recommend The Straight and Narrow for all you people out there that, feel like, you know, you want to take a little dip on the wilder side of life sometimes. You know, the grass is not always greener, and, the bars are real sometimes. So yeah, it was not a chosen sabbatical, but one that I am day by day enduring. So
yeah, and I think we need to set the record straight just real quick that you didn't do anything like crazy.
I killed a man to watch him die.
Yeah, like your reputation is not forever tarnished by you know, the incident you found yourself in. It's yeah, one that
I can go within 100 yards of a school.
Yeah. so, you know.
No, I had a run-in. It is a good reminder to everyone out there to not drink and drive.
Yeah.
I was reminded of that in the harshest way. So, I did get in trouble for a reckless driving. And I am currently on day number 113 of no drinking, no drugs, court mandated.
Okay.
And I can tell you, to anyone who has thought about doing it, yes, you will lose weight. I've lost about 40 pounds so far. It's straight up liver. But the days go by in dog years. Yeah. So it's 7 days to one day in there.
You know, and we hadn't planned, just so you guys are listening here, we didn't plan to go super deep into this conversation. You know, it's just one of those things where I thought, you know, if you felt comfortable addressing your absence over the past four months, I would be happy to have you talk about it. But to hear you sort of talk about, you know, the dog years. Ooh, you know, I mean, what do you do to keep yourself occupied now? I mean, you're just limited. You can't drink. Basically, you can't drink. You weren't a drug user to start with. So, you know, so
no, I definitely have my medical marijuana card.
Sure. We live in Florida, everyone, by the way. We live in Florida. Yes. So,
Never really got into that, you know, too deep, other than a gummy here and there to kind of, you know, take the edge off. But, you know, fascinating thing about our legal system and where science is taking us. I guess in the olden days, I run into people that are always tell me, oh yeah, I had that same problem a few years ago. You'll be fine. You just go to your breathalyzer once a month and no issues. They now give you urine tests that can tell if you've had a drink within 5 days.
Wow. Wow.
So not like, you know, oh, I slipped up and I had a drink on Thursday. Like, they will know if you had a drink on Monday.
Wow.
So I've been watching a lot of movies. I have been doing a lot of self-reflection. And I don't know, kind of working on me, working on, I don't know if I would call it a midlife crisis, but, you know, existential opportunity, I think, is a better word than midlife crisis.
Well, I mean, I just, again, want the record to state that, you know, I was aware of what happened pretty much after it happened, you know, and, you know, reached out to you and said, you know, if there's anything you need, let me know, because I can only speak for myself, but I'm in my mid 40s. And if I reflect back on the past 20 plus years, certainly something like that could have happened to me on more than one occasion. So, you know, I'm not without sin myself when it comes to that type of thing. But I will say that, you know, I certainly wanted to give you some time to, you know, you had a lot on your plate, and it was, you know, when I reached out to you, it was very gingerly like, hey, listen, I'm dying to have you back on the podcast, but when you're ready, you let me know. And you immediately text back, I'm ready.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do. Okay.
I've got hours to fill.
So now that we've got that out of the way, all right, let's, we got lots to talk, lots of catching up to do. That's the title of this episode, Catching Up with Jason Waters. So I guess we're recording 2 days after the 96th or 97th Academy Awards. I've already lost track.
It is the 96th
Academy Awards. I'm going to start by saying I purposely stayed away from social media and sort of the 24-hour news cycle post-Academy Awards. And I don't really know what the general reaction was, but I will say I was, as a whole, pretty entertained by this year's Academy Awards. I will start by saying the decision to start it an hour early.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. Was great. And I still watched the clock, and by Academy standards, this thing moved. This thing breezed along.
It really did. And I will give them credit. I'm sure if I was up there winning an award, I would want a little bit of that extra time. And you hear the song come on and you know it's, you can see the people, oh, they tell me I've got 6 seconds left. It felt clipped, but not rushed. And I will say I rewatched it the day after on Hulu. I'm not really even planning to, it just popped up and I said, oh, you know what? Let me, in case there was something I missed, which I actually missed the entire John Cena scene.
Okay.
Getting up to go to the bathroom. Missed that whole thing. So I got to rewatch that. Cutting out the coming up to the stage, shaking everyone's hand awkwardly, the commercials, skipping through the songs because I've already heard those. The rewatch took about 25 minutes total.
That's insane.
And that's rewatching the entire opening monologue and everyone's acceptance speech. 25 minutes.
It's kind of like a football game. Like a football game, if you break it down, it's only about 12 minutes long. But they spread that over 3.5 hours.
Yeah. So if for some reason you're looking at it next year, and you're going to go, you know what? I'm gonna pass on this one. I'll catch it tomorrow. As long as you don't turn on your phone and watch it first thing, you got it. No worries.
Yeah. No. I didn't even think about the fact that, ABC, Hulu, they're the same company. You know, Disney owns Hulu. Disney owns everything. And if they don't, they will. says the guy who's never going to get a job with Disney, so I can say that. Highlights for me, again, would just be the overall presentation of the show. I thought that, you know, in years past, things got very political. And it's important, I think, to make statements from time to time because you do – I mean, it's very rare to have a global audience these days with how sort of divided our attention spans are through, you know, the content that's out there. So, you know, I understand certain things need to be said. But overall, I thought this was a kind of a – you know, pretty, you know, we're going to celebrate the movies. We're going to celebrate the art. And, you know, obviously, like best documentary, that gentleman has earned the right to say whatever he wants. He really has. And I think that's an appropriate time to say it. But I thought the rhetoric was kept to a minimum this year. And I thought that was a breath of fresh air.
It really was. I was expecting, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is not one to hold in anything. And he, you know, of course, let his barbs fly right at the end about Trump. But it was as tame as you could expect. I did troll social media looking for, you know, a little bit of controversy here and there and really the toughest thing I could find, or the two things I could find, positive and negative, everyone loved Ryan Gosling and his number, and everyone hated the In Memoriam.
Let's talk about that for a moment. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not the first time they've had people singing live, and there's been times where they've had people, you know, playing cellos and violins and acoustic guitars and all that stuff. That's fine. Like, I understand they wanted to highlight the two gentlemen that were singing. They wanted to highlight that. I get that. You can do what we call an establishing shot to show that they're singing. Now, I have a 70-inch flat screen television, all right? And we're a good 10 feet away from it. And I'm struggling to see the names in the In Memoriam because they're not doing the classic just cut to what the audience is seeing.
Right, which I think they should have. It was in poor taste, especially for this. That split five screen that I think they thought would be a great idea for, you know, presenting nominees.
Oh,
not great for presenting obits.
Somebody's not going to be invited back to next year's production.
And I apologize. I don't know the name of the song. I know it was Andre Botticelli, Bocelli.
Yeah.
That all I could think about with that song was Will Ferrell singing it at the end of Step Brothers.
That's what Jesse said to me in real time.
I was in real time. I'm like, there. No, I can't. I can never listen to that song again without thinking of Will Ferrell. I'm sorry.
She said, "Can we watch Step Brothers after this is over?"
I watched it. I watched Step Brothers afterwards.
And I'm sorry. We're just to be clear. We're not making light of the In Memoriam by any means, but they could have done a better job. Absolutely no disrespect to people that were featured in the In Memoriam. But at the same time, like, what are we? I mean, that was
bad.
That was bad. All right. So let's talk a little bit about, let me just ask you this. When it comes to the actual awards itself, any surprises for you this year? Was there anything that made you go, "Well, I didn't see that coming"?
No, I mean, I think we haven't talked about Poor Things. To me, that was my favorite movie of the year.
Okay,
I was surprised at the progression of the awards because I had expected it to be just straight up Oppenheimer the entire way, and I think Robert Downey Jr. won his award early, and then there was nothing else until cinematography, I think.
Yeah. Well, the first award of the evening was Best Supporting Actress, and Divine Joy Randolph wins for The Holdovers, which, God, I haven't talked to him for so long. I really enjoyed The Holdovers, and she was fantastic in that film. But I remember looking at Jesse and going, it's going to be Emily Blunt. Oppenheimer is going to run the table. And then
I'm glad it wasn't. Not to take anything away from her performance, but screen time alone, I think. I don't think it was Emily Blunt's award to win. I think it was. Yeah.
So
and Holdovers was so fantastic.
It was. Now it's marred in a little bit of controversy.
I know. Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, well, the story breaks, I think, late Saturday night, Sunday morning, that The Holdovers is being accused of plagiarism, that Alexander Payne, no less, is being accused of plagiarism from a script that was part of the, you know, the blacklist, you know, this famous list of scripts that, you know, I think it's fascinating because I said, on the off chance that The Holdovers wins Best Screenplay, that's going to make for a really interesting, you know, situation because they're locked in. Like, that's all done. The voting
ended, is over.
Voting is over. So that would have been interesting. Speaking of Best Supporting Actor, kind of, I think we all saw Robert Downey Jr. coming on this one. Like,
After the BAFTA, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. So, going to Best International Film, because you and I have not talked about The Zone of Interest, a movie that I did watch, I would say, about 2 weeks ago. And I made sort of the mistake of listening to other podcasts sort of break the movie down a little bit, not spoil it, but sort of set up the premise of the movie. So I went into it kind of with an idea of what the film was about. And I feel like I cheated myself by doing that because I was prepared for, I was prepared for, you know, what the film was going to explore. And, you know, even knowing all that, it was still a gut-wrenching movie.
It's definitely, it's got to be in the top five of hardest films to watch this year. But spectacularly acted and directed. I don't know how that one did not come up for more awards.
Well, I knew after watching that movie, because I had the surround sound going, I said, this is going to win Best Sound. Like, that was the more so than even international feature. I said to myself, this is going to win Best Sound. And it did.
And it took home, was it two awards?
Two awards. Best Sound, Best International Feature.
International. Yeah.
So
well deserved.
Very, very well deserved. Talking about Best Actress for a moment. You and I have not, this is kind of interesting because we get to actually talk about movies that we haven't, that we've both seen. But, you know, typically some of these films we would have talked about at our, on our end of the year show that we do every year. So Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes.
If you were looking at the odds makers, they had it sort of neck and neck with her and Emma Stone. So Jason, I don't even really know your opinion on Killers of the Flower Moon.
To me, that, and again, you know, it's Scorsese and Thelma Schoonmaker. The pair of them put together just a masterclass in direction and editing. But the older the both of them get, the longer the movies get.
Yeah.
I think even Jimmy Kimmel made a joke about it. You know, I forget what he said, but. I appreciated that movie. It was not my favorite of the year. To me, his movie was a tough one to rewatch.
Yeah, I've watched it once, and it's not like The Wolf of Wall Street, where I'm like, I can't wait to watch this again, or Goodfellas, The Departed. Killers of the Flower Moon is a film that I'm glad that I saw. I understand why Lily Gladstone was nominated in that role. She was excellent in it. I was still walked away from that film with Leo in mind, though. The decision he made to you know, take on that role, I thought was fascinating. Just a fascinating choice, because he could have played any part he wanted, but he chose that role.
Yeah, and I mean, do you think he should have been nominated this year?
I do. I'll defer everybody to our Leo film retrospective. Leo is one of the great working actors today. He was incredible in the film, in a role that frustrated the hell out of me.
Yeah. And he was one of the ones who was not present at the award ceremony yesterday, which has got to be the first time that I can recall, because the man's been working since 1997 in two films? It seems like two films a year.
Yeah.
So to not be nominated and not attend, I thought that was a snub in both directions. So.
All right. So let me ask you this real quick, because here's a movie that I have not seen, although I saw a very interesting video essay on it. Maestro.
Not my favorite. Yeah. I'm sorry. Bradley Cooper in his writing and directorial debut, writing, directing, and starring in, I think he should have picked one of the three and ran with it. I thought he did a really great job portraying the role. The direction, it didn't remind me of A Star Is Born. It seemed like it was trying to be a biopic that, I don't know, it didn't hit home for me. I was not a fan of Maestro.
So the video essay that I saw, and I will forgive me for forgetting the YouTube channel, but they made a really compelling case. It was sort of, they were studying how Bradley Cooper campaigned for the Oscars versus Cillian Murphy. How the two, how Cillian did the bare minimum amount of press that, you know, the studio's like, you have to do these interviews, you have to do this. And he was very much out of the limelight. You know, he was not actively campaigning, whereas Bradley Cooper did the total opposite. He would be on
full court press
and was kind of completely shut out. So I haven't seen Maestro. I don't know if I will. Like,
it's worth a watch because you do learn from it. But, you know, to me, it's, I also learned from Bohemian Rhapsody.
You know what I learned from Bohemian Rhapsody? How to not make a biopic.
Yeah. No, Maestro, if you get to it eventually, it's worth it.
All right. That being said, I'll add it to the long list. But I'll put it on the list. I watched American Fiction this morning.
Still have not seen that. That is my big hole right now.
So I went into it very, very cold. What I mean by cold was not that I didn't want to see it, that I didn't know much of anything about the plot of the film. And it's so good.
Is it?
It's so good. It's so, you know, they tease just if you watch the Academy Awards, you can kind of pick up, you know, like hints of what the plot is about. It's an in your face movie as well. Like it's really worth a watch. In fact, I'm actually sorry that the film didn't get a little bit more recognition at the Academy Awards. It was excellent.
Yeah, and Cord Jefferson winning for that. Yeah, I followed him when he started. He was a writer on A Good Life or The Good Life. That hilarious show with Ted Danson and Kristen Bell. Right. And just quirky. I mean, the way he conveys comedy, it's definitely on my short list of movies to watch next.
One of the highlights of the evening for me was to see Godzilla Minus One win for best visual effects. I know I am a anti-CGI, I'm proponent, and I realize that film is chock filled with CGI, but I also recognize that the movie only cost $15 million to make.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Makes you wonder, you know, why these $200 and $300 million Hollywood productions are, why their budgets are so bloated. I saw it as a true underdog story in visual effects. And in fact, you know, in keeping with that theme, the gentleman that accepted the award, and bless his heart, he tried so hard, but he does reference Rocky, you know, in that acceptance speech. And I thought that was great. Have you seen Godzilla Minus One?
I have not.
It's good.
It sounds like it's worth it.
Did you see Shin Godzilla that came out in 2016?
No.
Okay, so
I've never been a Godzilla guy. I think Matthew Broderick ruined it for me.
Okay, so this is, again, guys, I don't have any notes in front of me, but let me give a breakdown, if you will, just for a moment on the Godzillas that I have seen and recommend. Okay. So right away, the American Godzilla movies have never really been good. I think we can almost agree on that. The Gareth Edwards one is the one that, you know, showed the most promise, but ultimately, you know, didn't deliver. Godzilla, for one thing. So Shin Godzilla, which I believe came out in 2016, is a fascinating film. It is a movie that pretends we're in a world where Godzilla doesn't exist. This is not a sequel, a prequel. This is a new imagining of the Godzilla. And it's really kind of an allegory for the Fukushima nuclear disaster and sort of the failed government's response to it. So, and Shin Godzilla is so hyper aware of the world that it lives in that it's you spend more time with the government and the bureaucrats and how they're unable to deal with this creature that is sort of rampaging towards Tokyo. And, you know, there's these great scenes where, you know, kids are on social media, you know, trying to get a selfie with Godzilla in the background, and it's just wrecking the city. And it's done very serious, not tongue in cheek. And I give it a strong, strong recommend. Now, that's Shin Godzilla that came out, you know, 8 years ago. So Godzilla Minus One, without giving too much of the plot, has really fleshed out characters who you care about. You know, our main guy is a kamikaze pilot who survived, you know, who chickened out. I like to say that. But and he is filled with, you know, torment and regret for his decision. And through the Godzilla attack, sees has a sort of a redemption arc of, now I can do something good. The movie is set in post-war Japan. And, okay. And wow. It's
are you talking 1945?
Yeah, yeah. And it's really okay. This crazy, like, kind of has elements of the first Jaws in it. It's really, really, it's good. I mean, listen, it's
okay.
It's not high art, but for what it is, it's really good. Like, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, for as much as we, like you said, cry about CGI, I'll take a good visual effects movie any day.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth watching. Now, the thing is that the company that in Japan, like, we still don't know when this thing's going to get a video on demand release.
Oh, wow.
You know, or go on streaming. You know, I was lucky enough to see it in the theater, and the version I saw was intentionally shown in black and white, which...
Oh, wow.
The film, when it was released, in color, but they did a re-release in black and white. And so it just sort of added to that authenticity of the time period.
Huh.
So
that's cool. Boy,
we went really long on Godzilla there, but but it was good.
We didn't do that, don't we?
The best actor category. Jeffrey Wright, Colman Domingo, Bradley Cooper, Paul Giamatti, Cillian Murphy. So... I mean, really, I'm not going to sit here and say the Academy got it wrong. I think they got it right. You and I saw that movie together.
I think they got it right. So having rewatched Oppenheimer probably three times since we saw it,
yeah.
My opinion's changed a little bit. I still believe the performance by Cillian Murphy was stellar. Robert Downey Jr.'s performance was really good. In a year where there were not that many spectacular films, 2023, I think that was probably one of the best. I would have probably given it to Barbie or Poor Things.
Interesting.
I think Poor Things, have you seen that?
I haven't.
Wow.
I'll confess to that. Just like you haven't seen American Fiction, there's okay. I have this glaring hole in my list, and that's just being honest. I haven't seen it.
So, because they say it, I can say it. It's not the N word. Right out of the gates, I was like, not even sure what I'm getting myself into. This looks like an art film. I think within the first 5 minutes, when one of the characters says, "Why, she's a very pretty retard," I was hooked. And Emma Stone in this role, I don't know if I've seen a performance in the last 5 years that's as magnanimous as her in this role.
So you're saying, setting the record straight, you 100% believe she deserved every, okay.
Here's the other thing that, I mean, if I'm going to go ahead and be honest, when I heard she was, when you could see her naked in it, I was like, oh, well, sure, I'll go ahead and watch that. she's naked for like 80% of it.
Oh my God. Okay. Wow.
And it's not one of those, you're like, oh damn, I just saw Emma Stone naked. You're like, good. By the end of it, you're like, you please put a shirt on or something. Just cover up already.
Oh gosh.
So between her and Willem Dafoe and Mark Ruffalo, if you don't blush at least five times, I'll be shocked.
All right, then that's it. That's the next movie I'm going to watch. And I'm not watching it because you're telling me that she's going to be naked in the movie. I was already like going to watch it. And, yeah, you know, the way you just described that, I don't think I, yeah. The holdovers. We touched, we talked about it briefly sort of at the beginning of this episode. I have been a strong, strong supporter of Alexander Payne movies. Election, all right. Obviously, Sideways, one of my all-time favorite movies. Nebraska, I thought was fantastic. The Descendants. There's been a couple misses in his filmography. Downsizing being one of them. That one missed the mark for me.
Yeah.
When I saw, I think they showed the trailer for The Holdovers when we saw Oppenheimer in the theater. I think they did because to the best of my knowledge, that was the last time I went to the movies.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah. Listen, I'm sticking to my guns here. Like unless it's something like an Oppenheimer, or you know, I would have seen The Holdovers had it been you know in the theater when I had time. But the thing is, like, nothing is really grabbing my attention. Like, I'm like, oh, and
oh, well, you're going to be screwed this year, then.
I know.
This is, I mean, 2024 is going to be the year of reboots and sequels.
Really? Now this is going to be the year?
This, I mean, really? This one is, I started going back and looking. I'm like, okay, I'm looking forward to these like 20 different movies. Like 18 of them are sequels.
Well, okay, so not to skip, because there's people going, you mentioned The Holdovers. Talk about The Holdovers, and then we'll come back to that in just a moment. Seeing the trailer for The Holdovers, knowing that it's a period piece and that Paul Giamatti is the star of the film, and I got enough from the trailer to say that I'm in. And the thing about Alexander Payne is most of his movies are grounded in a real sense of reality. You know, there's that, you know, he doesn't necessarily cast the best looking people for every role. He doesn't cast the contemporary, you know, movie stars for his roles. He casts what I call everyday people in a lot of the roles that he's in, which lends to the authenticity of the film.
It does. It
was so fucking good. It was
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti. Good for him for winning the Golden Globe, by the way. He absolutely deserved that.
Had it not been him against Cillian Murphy, that voting must have been neck and neck. What I love about Alexander Payne and what I love about Paul Giamatti is the two of them, they make you uncomfortable in a comfortable way.
Yeah.
You know, pairing them up on Sideways, you cringe through a lot of it, but you relate to it at the same time. And it was, I did not expect to like that movie as much as I did.
Yeah.
It was a very good December darling. One that I really am upset I did not see in the theaters.
It was one of those rare movies where within the first 10 minutes, I said, I'm in good hands here, and settled in and didn't check the runtime, didn't go how much longer, how much more do we have in this film. I was just thoroughly
along for the ride.
I was thoroughly engrossed in it. And it was one of those, like a typical Alexander Payne, you come to realize no idea how this story is going to end, you know, so you just don't know. Before we kind of shift to what's coming out later this year, my favorite part of this episode, let's see, looking at the best pictures. So, you know, you and I have discussed Oppenheimer on the podcast before. I think we share similar views. I think you and I both left our original screening of the movie underwhelmed, I think would be a kind of the way we described it. Said the acting was amazing, but I think our anticipation levels were set at a different barometer than the movie we actually got. I have seen it 3 times now in its entirety. I enjoyed the second viewing a lot better because I knew what to expect.
I guess the best word is I was off put by the politics of it. I was expecting it to be more of a, we said it before, a biopic, but a biopic in the hands of a master in Christopher Nolan. And what I got was, I don't know, an allegory. You know, the fact that almost 40% of it was involving politics. I just went, that's maybe I didn't realize how in depth this all went, but I went into it for the philosophical and physical.
Yeah.
Aspects of it. I wanted to see the science behind it. I wanted to see the person behind it. I wanted to see the implications of a post-bomb era. And I guess Christopher Nolan did do it right and Meyer did a little bit in politics, which is where it ended up. So
it made me go back and watch the Paul Newman movie, Fat Man and Little Boy. Did you see that from 1989 where he plays General Leslie Groves?
I remember that was required watching in high school.
Yeah.
Because that was probably the last time I saw it.
You know, and that movie's really interesting, you know, because it's all about Los Alamos. It's all about, you know, it basically opens up with, all right, here's what we got to do.
Yeah.
And you get some of that in Oppenheimer. You do. I want it more. Yeah. You know, I wanted to know, I don't want to keep rehashing this because we've talked about it before, but, you know, I wanted to see how dangerous what they were doing was, you know, people died, you know, wasn't even like people died, like, you know, making that bomb, you know, and let's see why people got radiation sickness, you know, things happened and that really wasn't touched on.
It really, you know, it created a town, but it sort of felt like the town popped up overnight. And you know, they did the back and forth between, you know, which type of bomb, you know, what should we use? And it just, I don't know. It lost itself somewhere in the middle, and it was also what a three hour film.
Yes, 2 hours and 55 minutes of people in rooms talking, and then 5 minutes of
a bomb.
5 minutes of the Trinity test, which I was underwhelmed by. Even though I know he did a practical explosion.
I was waiting for that zoom, like the pan out shot where you're going to see the fireball and.
Yeah.
Something needed to be in perspective so you could understand the
size. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like in Jaws when Hooper tells Brody to get to the end of the pulpit. You know, I need something for scale, for foreground. So, all right. We talked about American Fiction. We talked about The Zone of Interest. You have mentioned Barbie on previous episodes. Poor Things is now at the top of my list of films to see. Here are 1, 2, 3 movies that I have not seen. I'll always be transparent. Past Lives, Anatomy of a Fall, and we mentioned Maestro. So can you speak on Past Lives and Anatomy of a Fall?
Past Lives, I have seen that whiz by. I believe it's either Korean or Japanese movie. I have not seen that one. Anatomy of a Fall, I did rent that one, and I was glad I did rent it. It is worth a watch, but in a year where you need to find 10 films to nominate, that was a good one to nominate.
Okay, fair assessment.
If we were down to a hard five, it does not make the list.
What would be the hard five? I will go ahead and say... Oppenheimer, Barbie, probably The Holdovers, Poor Things, clearly from what you said. And then I think the fifth one probably would have been Killers of the Flower Moon just because of the, you know, the legacy, the pedigree, if you will, behind that film.
Yeah.
So let's see. We talked Best Actor. We talked Best International Feature Film with The Zone of Interest. What else we got here? We'd Sporting Actress. Original Song was What Was I Made For? Billie Eilish.
Yeah. Best. And that was we get to score John Williams' 54th Oscar nomination.
Good Lord.
54. You know who has the most by the, you know, the numbers guy? Who has the most?
So it's Oscar not nomination? John Williams.
It's not John Williams.
Oh no! Don't say
someone's
it.
Someone's got him by five.
Don't say it.
Your future employer.
What, Disney? No.
Yep.
Well,
Mr. Walt himself.
Mr. Walt himself. Yes, absolutely. Well, I knew that. I knew that. I thought you were going to say Harvey. I was like, oh, God. Oh,
no.
It's like, it's going to be Harvey.
I think they've whitewashed him out of Wikipedia.
Best documentary feature, 20 Days in Maripol. I did watch that. I saw that. Mm, that was tough. Really tough.
Still is.
Yeah. Let's see. Best original screenplay went to Anatomy of a Fall. Okay. Other nominees in that one was The Holdover, May, December, Past Lives, and Maestro. May, December is on my short list of films to watch. I have not seen it yet.
I have not seen that one yet either.
Let's see. Best Cinematography, Best Original Score, Oppenheimer, Best Makeup, Poor Things. That's Best Costume, Poor Things.
Well, when you see Willem Dafoe in Poor Things and his makeup, good Lord.
Okay. Best Production Design, Poor Things. Yep. All right, Best Sound, Zone of Interest, and Best Film Editing, Oppenheimer. Well, okay. So that was, you know, a brief look back at the Academy Awards. Now, you also wanted to talk about, you know, the year that his... Here's the question, Jason. We are into March of 2024, and I know you have a list of upcoming films.
I do.
And I want to give you an honest shake here, okay?
Okay.
And tell you whether or not I actually intend on seeing any of these films in the theater.
So, oh, really? Okay.
Because I am so... My last episode of this podcast was called When Movies Were Movies. And I spent the first half an hour just talking about how like over I am like with the current state of contemporary cinema as a whole. Not all of it, I shouldn't say.
Well, yeah, I think... So let's start with the good stuff that's coming
up. Okay, let's talk about the good stuff.
Okay. Superhero movies.
Oh, they're still making those.
Nope. So here's what I've got for you, my friend. 2019, we had four superhero, and this is between DC and Marvel.
Sure. Yep. Okay.
Four films. 2020, our COVID year, two films.
Sure.
21, seven films.
Seven.
27. 22, seven films.
Seven.
Last year, 2023, it's seven Marvel and DC movies.
Wow. And by the way, of those seven last year, I believe only Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 was like considered financially successful. And then like the surprise, because they left it in theaters forever, was that second Aquaman movie made a few bucks because they just didn't take it out of theaters.
They just kept it. They just kept it there. Running.
Wow.
So we had Ant-Man, Guardians 3, The Marvels.
Yeah.
Shazam, The Flash, Blue Beetle, and Aquaman.
I saw The Flash.
Yeah.
It's awful. Oh, it was so bad.
So Marvel is going to give us one movie this year.
Yeah, that's the Wolverine movie. Or no, the Deadpool Wolverine movie.
Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
Are you going to see it?
When it comes out on video on demand, when it comes out on streaming, I've never even seen Deadpool 2. You know, although I don't want to eat my words because I did see one of the few comic book films I did see in the theater, 2017. I saw Logan, directed by James Mangold, and had a great time. That was a really fun movie.
That was another tough one to watch.
No, it was fun. Because I didn't know it was R-rated when I went to see it. And as soon as the movie opens up, I'm like, oh, he's chopping limbs off. All the stuff you expect a man like him, Wolverine, to do, which he never did in any of the previous movies, he's just cutting limbs off. I'm like, they're going for it.
Yeah.
So
that was a rough one.
That's it. And I think one superhero movie.
Yeah, well, I keep hearing Venom 3 may be out by the end of the year, but it's been pushed. So we're definitely not getting anything from DC this year.
No, we're getting Superman Legacy or whatever it's called next year.
Yep.
We did have Madam Web this year. Lest we forget.
But that's not a Marvel or DC, is it? That's just a...
It's part of the Spider... So the way it works is like...
Spider... I didn't even bother to watch that one.
Like Sony owns the rights to Spider-Man and all the Spider-Man characters, but they've leased some kind of... They have some kind of deal with Disney and Marvel for Spider-Man, but they retain the rights to all the Spider-Man villains, and that's why we get Venom and Morbius and all these Sony movies, which technically fall under the umbrella of they are from Marvel Comics, but who gives a shit?
Yeah. So here's the problem, though. We're trading no superhero movies for sequels, reboots, remakes.
Give it to me. Let's go. So far,
all right.
The first movie you mentioned, I will probably not see that in the theater, but go on.
All right. Next one, which one is better, the original or the one coming out March 21st?
Roadhouse?
Roadhouse.
Okay.
Yep.
So you know me well enough to already know. You know, I literally have a cuff on my right hand, all right, as a Wade Garrett salute and tribute. I'm fascinated to see this film because I'm a big Doug Liman fan, the director, and, you know, that the fact that he's, like, squabbling with Amazon right now saying, wait mm-hmm. a second, you promised me a theatrical release and this is going straight to Amazon Prime. Look, admittedly, the trailer looked interesting, but guess what? This one's not going to be in the theater. So, nope. But you know what? Because I have Amazon Prime and it's just a sit on the couch and hit play, I will watch Roadhouse.
So you watch Roadhouse and then Ricky Stenicki?
So here's the thing. I keep waiting for the Farrelly brothers to recreate that magic that was Dumb and Dumber, Kingpin, you know, So There's Something About Mary, and to some degree, Me, Myself, and Irene. I, for some reason, find Stuck on You to be a very watchable film.
I like Stuck on You.
And Shallow Hal, for as awful as the concept of the movie is, has a couple really funny parts in it. So I'm not saying I won't watch the film, but because it's one of the Farrelly brothers, I'll give it. It gets a bit of a bump. It gets a, well, the premise of that movie sounds ridiculous, but because it's a Farrelly brothers, I'm going to at least give it a shot.
Here's what I'll give you about Ricky Stenicki, because I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yes.
Okay.
It will ruin a few songs for you.
Okay.
And make you only think about masturbating when you hear them from now on.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay.
Coming up right after, we've got another planned sequel. And I don't even know if you call it number 4 or number 5, but Ghostbusters?
Frozen Empire.
Do you count the Kate McKinnon one in the film franchise?
I mean, it's not canon.
So number 4... Ghostbusters 4, Ghostbusters 5, and the overall genre. Sure.
So we'll just say, for the sake of the fifth Ghostbusters movie, that's being released. I wasn't crazy about Afterlife. You know, that was a walk out of the theater movie for me, you know, before we even got to, you had actually told me that, you know, I won't say spoil, but you told me the ending. That's a definite not gonna see in the theater.
I don't think so either. I think I'm gonna wait for that one. The next one, though, the next remake prequel possibly that I do want to see just based on the trailer is The First Omen. Have you seen the trailer for that yet?
It's called The First Omen, and this is part of the Omen.
It looks to be set pre the Omen. So I'm guessing in the 60s, it looks like possibly in Italy.
Okay.
It looks spooky as hell.
Yeah.
The trailer I saw was about a minute and a half, and I think it stars Bill Nighy as a Catholic priest.
Okay. All right.
So check that one out.
The original Omen, directed by Richard Donner, is fucking good movie. It's hard to recapture. As we learned last year, it's very hard to recapture the magic of a 1970s horror, you know, classic. But I'll defer that one to you. I'll let you tell me if you think that's worth a watch.
I think I'm definitely going to see it in the theaters, and I'll let you know.
Okay. All right.
Guy Ritchie and Jerry Bruckheimer teaming up. Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Almost as bad as Birds of Prey and the blah, 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 blah.
Is the movie going to be rated R?
I don't know. I would hope so, knowing it's Guy Ritchie.
If the movie is rated R, that will be the first, what I will call, honest to goodness, probably see it in the theater. I like a lot of Guy Ritchie movies. And sometimes he surprises me when I think I'm not going to like something, like, oh, Wrath of Man, that looks silly. And then you watch it like, oh, this is really good. Yeah. But then what was the other one he made not too long
ago? Sherlock Holmes?
Not Sherlock Holmes. He made one like last year.
Oh.
What the hell was the name of that one? I can't remember. See, right now.
That's the one where we went, that's Guy Ritchie?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So that's a strong possibility. I liked the trailer for that.
Okay. Another one that looks like a prequel, Furiosa.
Yes, I will see that in the theater.
Yep.
You know why? Looking forward to that. Because it's George Miller. All right. George Miller has been the arbiter. He has been the sole creator of this entire Mad Max universe. So he is directing it. I'm in.
Yep.
Yep. So there we go. I can guarantee I will see that in the theater.
Fourth in the series, I believe, maybe fifth. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
It's one day I'm going to sit down and watch those movies. The Matt Reeves ones. I'm going to sit down. And I'm going to watch them. I've just, you know, I can't tell you why I haven't seen them, but they just, you know, it's like The Equalizer with Denzel. I'm told it's a pretty entertaining film. Still haven't seen it. The Equalizer
is pretty entertaining.
It's just, you know, there's some movies I just haven't seen.
I will say for the body capture CGI and what Andy Serkis did with Caesar, that's 30, 40 years from now, people will look back at that and go, oh, this is where it all started.
That was the turning point. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
really great.
Absolutely. Okay.
Definitely not. To me, I'm shocked that they're going as big with the marketing on that one. It's not going to bring people into the theaters.
Yeah.
One that's coming out on Netflix, Richard Linklater's Hitman, starring Glenn Powell.
Sold. Sold. Right. Richard Linklater. Sold.
Yep.
Done. Enough said. Yeah. Sold.
Our first Shyamalan film, not directed by M. Night.
Not
directed by I. Night Shyamalan. Aishana is coming out with The Watchers on June 7th.
And what relation is that?
That would be one of his daughters.
Okay. One of his daughters. Okay. What's the name of the movie? The Watchers? What's it called?
The name of the movie is The Watchers. There's very little, much like, you know, most of his films, there's very little known about it other than it's set in the Irish countryside with Dakota Fanning and probably mythical creatures, monsters.
Well, here's what I will tell you. I will do the same thing I did last year. When the trailer, has the trailer dropped for that movie yet?
No.
Okay, because so when the trailer comes out, I won't watch it, and I'll do the same thing I did with Knock at the Cabin, all right? I will go into that movie knowing nothing, and that's what I did at Knock at the Cabin, and really, that was a great experience.
I think that's the one you and I disagreed on.
Yeah, because I didn't know anything about the movie.
So, and this next one, possibly a June release, Bad Boys 4? Bad Boys for the assisted living facility?
Listen, Bad Boys for Life was the last movie I saw in the theater in 2020 before, you know, the whole world changed. And I remember liking the film, not loving it, liking it until the last 10 minutes of the film. And I said, oh, they're going to make this. They're trying to do a Marvel thing here. They're trying to do... I was like, they're ending with, you know, end credit scenes. There's end credit scenes, and there's. I was like, oh no.
Yep.
I love the original Bad Boys. Bad Boys 2 has its moments. All right, still
I like Bad Boys
40 too, minutes longer than it needs to be, but it's still, you know, it's Michael Bay. You know, what are you gonna do? Maybe.
So, I'm gonna mark you down for maybe. Here's one that the trailer looks Fabulous. The Bike Riders.
Yep, I'm in.
Yeah, yep. that one crept up on me. I thought that was that just looks fantastic. It's
supposed to have a September or December release, but they kicked it down 6 months. They kicked it 6 months, so they pushed it back. Yeah, it looks good. I'm in.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right. I honestly, I have not looked into this one. I believe it's a sequel. If it is, I will go ahead and say fuck you. And that is Twisters.
Yeah. So it is a sequel. All right. I've seen the trailer. Okay. They even have the Dorothy machines again, you know? Yeah. It literally is everything that's wrong with filmmaking today can be summed up in Twisters. The well is running dry. We gotta keep putting out intellectual property that people recognize. Twister was one of those rare movies that was popular when it came out, made a boatload of money, and they left it alone because that's what they did in the 90s.
Yeah.
Twisters, which stars Glenn Powell.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So no, I won't see
Glenn Powell is going to be in like six things this year. Hell, he's starring in that Richard Linklater Hangman.
Listen, what are you going to do?
Ride that fabric.
Hangman. Yeah. What are you going to do? He's Hangman now. He's forever going to be Hangman.
Yeah.
Just don't do the Val Kilmer, you know, but don't make Val Kilmer choices. Don't do the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, yeah. We talked about Deadpool 3, another sequel. Our next M. Night movie, Trap, is coming out this year, starring his other daughter, Salika.
I'm in.
So it's a Shyamalan year. I'm always in for that.
Listen, the fact that guy gets to make movies, you know, he's had some the highest of highs and kind of the lowest of lowest. And Universal's kind of like, here's $5, $10 million. Keep making whatever movies you want. We'll put them out in the theater. They make $80 million. That's a formula that I hope Universal just keeps on doing, so I will support those films.
Yeah. And I think it was Jefferson Cord who said at the Oscars, too. He's like, just instead of making one movie that makes $100 million, make 20 movies that make $5 million.
Well, yeah, no, he said something to the effect of instead of making, you know, one movie that costs $100 million, make 10 that cost $10
million. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Like, yes.
Same thing. Just put out quality over quantity.
They used to do that.
Yeah.
They used to do that.
I think, let's see, of the movies I've got left, only one of them is an original, I don't have a release date on it. It's Nicolas Cage in Long Legs.
Done. Sign me up.
If you should watch the trailer for that. I don't even know what it's about, but it looks creepy as hell.
All right, I'll watch the trailer for that. That's interesting.
The other ones that are coming out that are... I don't even know where this. I think this one fits after number two, which is Alien Romulus.
That's
another Alien movie coming out.
That's really tough for me because they keep getting me to go back. You know, like I saw Prometheus in the theater, and I was one of the few people that liked the movie. I was like, this is very it. Prometheus is one of those last bastions of an R-rated movie that got a big summer release that was Ridley Scott, and I enjoyed it. And then Alien Covenant comes out in 2017, I think, and it's more bizarre than Prometheus, but it's still trying to say something. I don't know.
I have to watch the trailer.
Yeah, that'll be a big let me see the trailer.
Speaking of Ridley Scott... Gladiator 2.
So, From what I understand, like they rebuilt the same Colosseum set that they used for the original. And that's know what? If you're going to do that type of tactile, you know, practical effects, okay. I'm in.
I'm a classical archaeology major, so I'm definitely in. But at the same time, I'm like, really? Gladiator 2? Like,
must be more story to tell. I don't know.
Continuing on with these sequels. Beetlejuice 2. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Michael Keaton, Catherine O'Hara, Winona Ryder returning along with Jenna Ortega.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Burton directing.
Yep.
So.
I know Michael Keaton said he'd have to... You know, he would only redo the character if the script was right. And with Tim Burton there, maybe it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's going to depend on if Tim Burton decides to do a whole lot of remember this bits or tries to go with something, you know, with more original-ish, you know, it's, you know, possibly. I mean, I hate to say it, but I'll wait and see what the trailer looks like. So,
yeah, I think I'm going to see that one regardless, just because I love that original movie so much. Oh, yeah. And it's either I'm going to watch it eventually. So it's either going to ruin it or I'm going to go, you know what? We waited 26 years and I finally got it.
Yeah.
Last one on my list. Yep. I mean, there's plenty of movies coming out this year, but the last one that I think I'm interested in, again, a sequel, but a sequel that might be the best sequel of the year, Joker, Folie à Deux.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga.
So
Joaquin Phoenix.
Todd Phillips directing again.
Todd Phillips doing it again.
And it's a musical. You know, I hate to say it, but The Joker was one of those rare movies that I'm glad I saw it. And I said, I'll never watch it again. And I've stuck to that. Yeah. That was a hard movie to watch for me. That was really challenging. But you got my curiosity piqued. You know, it's going to be another R-rated movie. And that first Joker made more than $1 billion. So, you know, Warner Brothers probably gave what we say, Warner Brothers probably gave Todd Phillips final cut. So, you know, it's his vision. So I'll be really curious about that film.
Yeah. So of those 20 movies we just went through that are coming up this year, I'm going to see sequels, remakes, reboots. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 of those are remakes or sequels. The rest are what might end up being interesting films.
And we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what the, you know, the Oscar contender movies will be in November and December. So it'd be interesting. Well, Jason, it's like there was never even a gap in our conversation. So
yeah, I think I miss talking movies with you, buddy.
Yeah. So welcome back, and we will get back on to our regular schedule very, very soon. And there's lots to talk about, and I appreciate you coming on the show, man. And I'll text with you later tonight, and we'll just set up some more recording dates. So thanks again for being on the show.
Game on.
All right, everybody. My name is Dana Buckler, and thank you so much for listening.